Our guest today, T-Bone Burnett, first came to notice as part of Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review Tour in late 1975, early 76. He and other members of that band on the tour were signed to a lucrative record deal as the Alpha Band. He subsequently made some well-regarded but poorly selling solo albums before turning more successfully to producing. Over the last 30 years, he's produced albums for Roy Orbison, Elvis Costello, Counting Crows, Los Lobos, Marshall Crenshaw, The Bodines, The Wallflowers, Gillian Welch, and Raising Sand with Alison Krauss and Robert Plant, which won Album of the Year honors. In 2001, Burnett became the music producer and composer for the Coen Brothers film, O Brother, Where Art Thou? That film soundtrack was a smashing success and led to a successful career producing others, including Cold Mountain, A Mighty Wind, and most recently, Crazy Heart. He joins us today at the end of our month of anniversary shows to look back on the last couple of decades in his music, and I'm sure he has some thoughts about the future as well. T-Bone produced Bruce Coburn's 1991 album, Nothing But a Burning Light. Bruce was the first guest on the World Cafe. And I asked T-Bone if he saw the 90s as a time of resurrection for the singer-songwriter, as I do.
I didn't notice that. I didn't notice the decade. As I remember it, you know, I remember the record business deciding that singer songwriters were passé. That's what I remember. And I had a particular slant on it. But I remember being very happy when Columbia became interested in Bruce Coburn. And, you know, Columbia decided to take Bruce Coburn's whole catalog and to reinvigorate his recording life, which was a tremendous thing for them to do. Donny Einar did that.
Great big love sweeping across the sky.
Back in the 90s, something happened that probably won't happen a whole lot nowadays is you produced a couple of albums that went multi platinum, and I'm talking about the Counting Crows debut album in 1993, and the Wallflowers Bringing Down the Horse, and here you essentially had two. I mean, the Wallflowers had recorded one album before, but they were essentially new bands, baby bands, and you've done a lot of those over the years, and do you approach those any differently than you would a veteran?
Well, I think so. I mean, it's wonderful working with a band that's just starting, that hasn't made a record, that has a large group of material that they've been out rehearsing for years, and you know, that's a privilege, really. And it's a, you know, you have to be careful with it, because these, you know, you're setting these people on a course that's going to either run them aground or take them through their life, you know. That's a great thing, working with young bands like that. With veterans, it's, you know, it's where I'm at in my life. I'm 63 now, so I much prefer, I think, working with people who are seasoned as well and can pull the trigger when it's time. But there's, you know, that there's a challenge in that, and that there's all this invention with a young band, and a lot of times musicians who've been around for a while are past their time of invention.
It's got to be somebody for me. I want to be Bob Dylan. Mr. Jones wishes he was someone just to let him off. Fuck you and everybody love you. Our son is just about as funky as you can be. Mr. Jones and me staring at the video. When I look at the television, I want to see me stare right back at me.
We're talking with T-Bone Burnett about the last couple of decades in music, and right about the middle of our tenure in 2000, you figured out something to do with music that it was really, in many ways, kind of revolutionary. And that is, we're talking about, of course, your work on O Brother, Where Art Thou, which was how the film complemented the music, vice versa. And, man, what you created with the subsequent concerts and everything that was tied in with that was just so uplifting and such a big thing for really the entertainment, the music business, everything tied in with that. Some of it, I know you always felt that was going to be a success, but I think a lot of people would say, wow, it took a real chance with that. But that showed you a new way to work, and I think that was kind of a way that's outside of the traditional music business.
Well, yeah, working in films definitely takes you outside of the traditional music business. In the music business, we're in this time of creative destruction, and a lot of new things are taking shape. I moved into working in films really when I was a kid. That's what I wanted to do. As I've said before, I wanted to be Burt Bacharach and write movies for films. And at some point in the 80s, it became clear that the cat was out of the bag, that the record companies were essentially releasing masters, you know, of their work, or let me put it this way, an easily reproducible version or a copy of the thing that could be, you know, reproduced infinitely. So it was obvious that they were heading for trouble, and so I started looking for other things to do, like maybe I was going to be a painter, you know, so I called the Coen brothers and said, what are you guys doing? And we had dinner and started getting into that, because I thought maybe I'll actually start writing songs for movies. So that gave us that for us was like a bridge from the old world of the 20th century record business, 20th century and the music business of that century, and a way to do it, to reach people in a completely different way, which is through other media. And, you know, that was the movie theater became a great radio station. And now we have the internet, which is a great radio station as well. You know, so certainly, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou was a chance for us to do something with music that wasn't dependent on the normal channels of distribution and promotion and all that stuff.
And more recently, a couple of projects, certainly one movie project would be the Crazy Heart Project, and a new album with Jeff Bridges as well, where I wouldn't say it's the same thing, but you got a chance to work with a lot of people like Stephen Bruton that you had worked with in the past that would complement the movie and therefore get the music out there. And you look at how Jeff Bridges' album has done really, really well using the same kind of idea.
Yeah, well, you know, there were such a bottleneck in the 20th century, and especially late in the 20th century, there was such a bottleneck that people like Stephen Bruton couldn't get through. You know, so now we've got the opposite problem, which we need a little bit of a bottleneck, because there's this completely undifferentiated YouTube kind of universe where it's hard to find anything. You know, it's everything's so available, it's hard to find things. But that's going to be, I do think that's going to be an important part of getting music out going forward, is not just doing an album, but doing an album and a movie and a television show and or other things, you know, internet stuff.
Something else that it's really interesting. You've had these huge peaks along the years of the World Cafe has been around, and one of them, of course, was Raising Sand with Robert Plant and Alison Krauss being able to work together on this amazing album. And a lot of that had to do with song choice. And I'm wondering if you can think back to that, how you worked with the two of them on figuring out what songs to do.
That's another good example of this collaborative nature of what I think is going to be the future of music. I think there's going to be a lot more of that kind of stuff. We started out that record. I remember I was in Vancouver and I was up at the Salmon Hatchery. It's an incredible place outside of Vancouver. And I was on the cell phone with Robert Plant and Alison Krauss. And they started, you know, we just started throwing songs around. And Through the Morning, Through the Night, I think, or Polly, actually, that's the first one. I said, have y'all ever heard Polly by Gene Clark, Gene Clark? And they hadn't. And Alison was saying she wanted to do something really dark. And Robert he wasn't really saying what he wanted to do. He was just saying, Alison wants to make this really dark. I would send some songs and they weren't dark enough. So finally, I found that song Polly, which I thought was dark enough, and that was the kind of key that unlocked the door to the material.
Polly, come home again. Spread your wings.
What an appetite there is for this music when it's approached in the right way like that. You know, this Americana / singer-songwriter music. It's just amazing when you finally hit the right thing like that. And the two of them, obviously they bring their own things to it, but I think the alchemy of the two of them together was something that I'm not sure that you expected that to be that way.
No, mm-mm. It's all tone, you know. The REM without Michael Stipe would sound like another band playing Rickenbacker 12 strings and drums and bass, you know. Michael Stipe's tone creates a whole sound for REM, and same with Colin Molloy, you know. He creates this incredible sound, and Adam Duritz, you know, all those singers, some of whom we've just talked about, you know, they have this mystical tone that they're able to create a whole world of sound with, and the way they interact with the band.
T-Bone Burnett is our guest today, and we're asking him to wrap up two decades for us, and he is doing admirably well here. Talk a little bit more about people collaborating together, because that has obviously been a lot of what you've been doing over the years.
Well, you know, this is one of the big shapes that's changed. Although, you know, if we look back, the Beatles were certainly an interesting collaboration, right? Right. And successful, yep, in every way. So, you know, the fact that Paul McCartney and John Lennon were born in such close proximity to them, two of the best singers in the history of rock and roll, at least, if not two of the best singers in the history of music, are born within miles of each other, grow up, start writing music and playing and singing together. That's a phenomenon. And it's no wonder they became a phenomenon. The internet certainly provides us with the capability of that same sort of collaboration that, you know, in those days, it was passed from one person to another by word of mouth. The more important collaboration is the collaborations that happen between and among people sitting in a room. There was a time through, you know, through the last part of the century where the industries got more and more facile at creating celebrity. There were times when people took off on their own and people were pitted against each other. Artists were pitted against each other, as like who was going to sell the most, who was going to get the furthest. While that still goes on, I'm sure there's a lot more of a tendency of people to be open to other people's creativity, other people's music, other people's ideas, and to give it a chance to collaborate. And you know, I think there'll be, Robert and Allison were part of that, of course. And Oh Brother Where Art Thou was certainly part of that. There was a lot of people giving in to this idea of a center.
In constant sorrow all through his days, I am a man of constant sorrow. I've seen trouble all my.
We're talking with T-Bone Burnett about the last couple of decades in music, and you know, looking back over just this 20-year slice of your career, you've been involved with so many things that have had success on an artistic terms, on a commercial terms, however you want to look at it. How do you choose? I mean, one has to assume that a part of this is you choosing these projects.
You know, I try to listen to the best music possible whenever I listen. I listen to Ray Charles, you know, and Aretha Franklin, and I try to use my attention wisely so that there's a standard, you know. And by the way, this is one of the things, this leads me to this notion that we've discussed before, but one of the problems with the digital age is there's been a complete collapse in standards in recorded music. And recorded music is to the United States as wine is to France. It's part of our national identity. It's part of what we've given the world. We conquered the world with it, really. I mean, I think there's a good argument to say that Russia finally was defeated by rock and roll. You know, that the kids over there wanted Beatles records and blue jeans, you know. And, you know, it's an incredibly powerful cultural force. And it's been degraded tremendously. If you look, there's a new Bob Dylan collection out, his first eight records in mono vinyl. And if you put one of those on, any one of those, like let's say Subterranean Homesick Blues, put that on, and then go on the internet and download it from any source in an MP3, and you can hear the same song, and you can hear the difference graphically. This isn't an audiophile thing. This is a quality of life thing. You know, the person who invented MP3 never intended it as a standard in the first place, a music standard. And the fact that it's turned into this sort of de facto music standard for the internet is just, we have to create a digital standard for the 21st century that can hold up to the passage of time. You know, we have this incredibly important library that the record industry put together, the recording industry put together in the 20th century, has to be preserved. And we can't go from, you know, a really high quality analog master to a CD and then copy the CD to an MP3, then send the MP3 BitTorrent, you know, rip it. You know, it just keeps getting degraded and degraded. We can't continue to degrade this library that we've spent our whole existence as a nation putting together. You know, this is what we do now. We don't make anything anymore. We make music. We make films. We have ideas. We're a knowledge society now. And as a knowledge society, during this last 20 years, we've reduced the value of our knowledge to zero.
T-Bone, that was a fantastic answer, but it wasn't to the question as to how.
Oh, what was the question? Oh, how do I choose?
Yes.
I try to listen to the good stuff, and then I choose the stuff that sounds the most like the good stuff.
That's a good answer.
You know, yeah. Jimmy Iovine says a great thing about mixing. He says, you know, when I mix, I find the best thing and turn it up the loudest, you know. And, you know, if I find somebody that sounds, you know, that moves me the same way as what Ray Charles moves me, you know, or Jimmy Reed, something like that gets inside me, you know, then that's the thing I try to do. I try to do the things that I feel like I can do with my whole heart, you know. And I feel like if I can put that into it, then I can leave it and move on and let time take care of the rest of it.
I guess the hardest thing is to kind of foresee where this is all going to end up. We've got to figure out a way that people can survive in this kind of a knowledge-based society, particularly creative ones.
Right. Well, you know, I think the internet will become more of a broadcast medium, and the musicians will have to get paid through that. You know, Google a year ago made... I can't remember all the figures, but they made billed $30 billion in advertising. 9% of that traffic was driven to them by music. So that, you know, Google has to share some of their advertising revenue with the musicians, the same way broadcasters shared some of their advertising revenue with the musicians, and which led to BMI and ASCAP. So that will be one way the internet will become a performance medium that is the musicians are taken care of when they're, you know, it's not right to build a company on the back of people who don't get anything in return for this company being built. So that's something just as a matter of ethics and justice that will have to be worked out. You know, and of course, there's the whole live world. But as far as recorded music, we have to look at recorded music as an important part of our national identity and an important part of our culture. And we have to take care of it. What we're doing right now is... you know, this is essentially taking a photograph of a painting and then throwing out the painting. So as we arrive at a new standard, and that's why I was talking about that so much, as we arrive at a new standard, the musicians will begin to get paid because the things that people are listening to will have value. Right now they don't. People don't feel like MP3s have any value, and I don't either. I think that there'll be a lot more of this collaboration between movies, music, television, music. All of these things will turn into another shape. and there'll be a global music license of some kind. A global digital music license will come about eventually, I would guess.
Always great to talk with T-Bone Burnett. Our thanks to him for being our guest today. And we have some more of the music that he's produced over the years, including a special television production in black and white for Roy Orbison when we return to the World Cafe.